I think it'll be the biggest discovery since antibiotics. Probably the biggest impact on my life is my youngest child is autistic. At 23 years of age, he might have had 20 words, maybe 30. He could put two words together.
Where is he at now? What is he like?
He lives on his own, drives a car, has a job, and is completely conversant.
No way.
The CDC and the NIH said we have to figure out why autism is increasing. They did a study in 2005 where they just took kids that had died and they looked at their brains. What they found out was all these autistic kids had inflammation in their brains. They actually said if we could ever figure out how to control glial cell inflammation, we'll be able to treat autism. Fast forward to 2008, 2009, CTE, remember all the football players? They found out that these football players were getting glial cell inflammation. There was 30 different trials looking at ways to control brain inflammation. And the 30th thing they used was umbilical cord blood.
How often did you continue to do this?
He's had 5 treatments over 6 years. Within days, he was trying to start to talk more. His executive function picked up. He started talking, then he started asking questions, then he started using full sentences. If you would have told me that 5 years ago, I would have told you, you know, it would be impossible. Sorry.
No, I'm crying. That's amazing.
Welcome back to Misunderstood. I'm George Carmona, filling in today for Rachel as she is in Los Angeles getting some exciting interviews gathered for all of you. Today, our guest is Dr. Eric Weiss, a board-certified plastic and reconstructive surgeon who has become a trailblazer in the world of regenerative medicine, specifically using umbilical cord stem cell therapy to help treat autism. But this isn't just professional for him. It's deeply personal. Dr. Weiss and his wife, Christine, are the parents of Marston, a young man on the autism spectrum, who at the age of 23 years old had a vocabulary of only 20 words. Desperate to find something that could truly make a difference, they turned to umbilical cord stem cell therapy. What happened next was nothing short of extraordinary. Marston's language began to blossom. His emotional responses became more connected, and for the first time, he started engaging with the world in a meaningful way. There's a really touching moment in this podcast in which Dr. Weiss talks about the first phone call that Marston ever made to his cousin, and boy, you better have some tissues nearby. It is an extremely touching story. The transformation was so profound that Eric and Christine documented it in their book, Educating Marston. Today, Dr. Weiss is using the same therapy to help other families through his practice, North Florida Stem Cells. On this episode, we are going to dive deep into the science, the hope, the controversy, and the potential of stem cell therapy treating autism. It's Dr. Weiss's mission to try to get this word out to everybody who is affected. So if you know somebody who has a family member who has autism, this episode, send it to them, share it, write a review. If you're on Spotify right now, leave a comment. We appreciate you guys listening. Now sit back, relax, and enjoy Rachel's conversation with Dr. Eric Weiss.
Dr. Weiss, thank you so much for joining us on Misunderstood today.
Thank you for having me.
So I'm so interested in the reasons that we had you on the show to basically talk about if stem cell therapy is the rage of the future and if that's really what's going to get us through. But I want to just start with your background a little bit and tell people how you got into medicine, what you wanted to be as a child, you know, what it was like studying and getting to where you are now.
Okay, well, I grew up, my father was a doctor, and so I can remember, you know, going to the hospital with him and kind of doing house calls and things like that, you know, back when, you know, there were house calls. Mm-hmm. But you know, grew up in Florida, you know, barefoot fishing, eventually found myself at, you know, Davidson College and majored in chemistry. But Davidson is part of the kind of the Duke system. The Duke brothers actually gave money to Davidson as well as Duke University. So then I went to Duke University Medical School, and there I kind of fell in love with surgery. I remember doing my medicine rotation and taking care of medicine patients. But kind of once when you have diabetes, you have diabetes. And when you have high blood pressure, you have high blood pressure. But then on my first day of surgery, there was a young teenager, 13, 14, who was pretty sick with appendicitis, you know, at 6 a.m. And I got to see him. And then he had his appendix out. And the next time I saw him was about 8 o'clock that night as I was getting ready to go home. And he was sitting up in bed, you know, eating a pizza. And I became enamored with separating the disease from the body, you know, not managing it, but making it go away. And so then I ended up, my initial study was going to be transplant because I like transplant surgery. I went to University of California, San Francisco, where I did general surgery. And due to a quirk of nature, I had to fill in for a plastic surgeon for a couple months. And it changed my life. And I became, you know, a plastic surgeon, went to University of Miami. I went to Duke on a Navy scholarship, ended up in the Navy, and then kind of had a thriving plastic and reconstructive practice, really until a couple of weeks ago when I kind of gave up surgery to do regenerative medicine full time. And, you know, probably the biggest impact on my life is my youngest child is autistic. And it's been a lifelong journey trying to get him to be able to fit in society. And he did. And I think stem cells was the leading cause of this. And that's what kind of changed my life.
Unbelievable story. Okay. So let's talk about stem cells. You know, it's interesting. I have a almost 13-year-old. I gave birth at UCSF. And I remember before I gave birth, they were asking me all sorts of questions about what I wanted to do for my, you know, during the birth and after. And one of them was if I wanted to keep the placenta, freeze it, they offered some sort of stem cell banking from the umbilical cord. I had never heard about this before. I had lived in New York up until then. And then 2 years later, I moved out. And not a lot of women that I know that did not give birth in San Francisco even had ever heard of that. So that was the first time I ever, you know, was that was brought into my life. And it was confusing to me. And, you know, I didn't really understand it. And now when I hear of stem cells, it makes me think of anti-aging. I hear tons of people going to different countries to get different stem cell things that maybe are not legal here yet. So I think there's a lot of misconception and questions around stem cells and what they are and what they really do and if it's a placebo effect thing or if it's a real thing. So can you kind of walk us through what are stem cells and what is the point of them?
Okay, well, the first thing is, I guess there's two main types of stem cells. You know, I like to say embryonic stem cells or fetal stem cells. Their job is to make a baby. And then there's adult stem cells, and their job is to heal. And that you would think that in an umbilical cord, there'd be embryonic stem cells, but there's not. There's adult stem cells. And that's because halfway through the second trimester, the baby's already formed. It's just growing. And so it was a long time coming, but we knew there was something different about young animals and young humans, that they just heal better. And so it was discovered that we have these things in our body called adult stem cells. They hang out in the bone marrow. They hang out in the peripheral fat. They're in dental pulp. They're in menstrual blood. They're all sorts of places. But they have the ability to seek out inflammation, seek out damaged cells, and heal them. So they have this incredible healing capacity. And fortunately, the umbilical cord is full of them. I mean, it's like chicken soup for healing.
Oh, wow.
And so it's just making the news now, but umbilical cord blood and its stem cells have been used in medicine for 60 years. There's 80 different diseases that it's the primary treatment for.
Wow.
So the reason they ask women if they want to bank their stem cells is because you don't know if your baby's going to get leukemia. You don't know if your baby's going to get cancer. You don't know if your baby is going to have a stroke or hypoxic injury. But all these things are now treated with those cells. It's I think it'll be the biggest discovery since antibiotics.
Wow.
In the umbilical cord blood, there is like chicken soup for healing. There's five different stem cells. Stem cells that affect the brain, stem cells that affect the heart, stem cells that affect the gut, stem cells that affect the skin and cartilage. And all these are now starting to be recognized, and it can really impact on your health. You know, and the interesting thing is, if I may interrupt, is that they don't necessarily become engrafted, but they show your body how to heal itself.
Wow. So how long can these things be banked, so to speak? Does that mean frozen, by the way?
That means frozen.
Okay. How long will they last?
That's a good question. Because probably 10 or 15 or 20 years out, the viability may have gone down, you know, 99%. You know, we don't know that. And that's because the new banking techniques, the new preserving techniques, the new processing techniques, you're getting much more viability than you were. And so I would assume about 10% loss per year.
So now if you have missed the boat on banking your baby's umbilical cord, stem cells, whatever, can you use someone else's? How does that work? Or do they make synthetic versions of this that replicate what they are?
No, it's actually a great product. And that's because these stem cells are so new, they don't have the genetic markers on their cell surface that determine self. So they're almost like generic cells. Anybody can get them. And so there's the more they work in your body, the more they start to express self, and then the more they're cleared. And so these cells don't act long in your body, but they act and they last long enough to heal a lot of things. You can inject them into a knee and regrow knee cartilage. You can inject them into a wound and help the wound close with much less scarring. And, okay. And so that's their purpose. But no, they can be used on anybody.
Wow. Okay. So it doesn't need to be your own. That's fantastic. And where are they getting the banks of stem cells? Are people donating this? Is this from people that have recently died? How does that happen?
No, it's all donations.
Okay.
You know, in a lot of places, the woman's asked if she wants to bank them for themselves, but that can be, you know, pricey. Or if she doesn't want to bank them, can she donate them? And so when they're donated, there's usually genetic screening of the mother and the father. Then there's a blood drawn of the mother to make sure she doesn't have any infectious diseases.
Right.
Then, you know, everything gets screened, it gets looked at. And if everything's good, then that umbilical cord blood is kind of placed in a public bank where if somebody has a disease that can use it, then they can access it.
Got it. And is this something that's covered by insurance for people?
If you have one of those 80 things, that's, you know, and if it's FDA approved, it is. Mm-hmm. Like for autism and other things, it's still not FDA approved yet.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So it's, but 20% of all medications are used off label. So the fact that these cells are in the US formulary, you can still request them.
Okay.
Because the FDA regulates healthcare. It regulates drug companies.
Yeah.
It doesn't regulate healthcare. Healthcare takes place between you and me. Mm. And if we agree that we should use it, then we can use it.
Right. Okay. So let's talk about it in terms of anti-aging. You see a lot of, you know, people promoting that you can go to their clinics. They, I guess, inject you with it. Also in some sort of creams, they tend to show that they have stem cells. What is real? What is not? And what works?
Well, there's no doubt stem cells work. You know, they migrate to inflammation, and then usually starting about mid-30s is when you start to significantly age.
Mm-hmm.
You know, stem cell and stem cell products have been shown to grow hair. You know, they increase the ejection fraction in your heart. They regrow cartilage. You know, they can help your gut. There's all sorts of things they can do. I'm a little wary about the products that have stem cells in them because these are living cells. Mm. And it always seemed crazy to me. First of all, they won't be alive in the cream.
Mm-hmm.
And then how are you going to get a living cell through your skin? You know, the skin is a barrier. Now, having said that, stem cells work by secreting something called an exosome. And that exosome is a very small packet of information. And that's how it tells your body to heal itself.
Hmm.
And those things aren't living, and they are very small. And if you can get the right cream, you probably can get it through the skin. And so,
do you have to have a prescription for something like that? Or are these sort of off-label companies that they'll send you off-label stuff without a prescription? You think that
exosomes are controlled. So you probably would need at least a medical director of a company who does it.
Right. I've never understood the creams. Maybe as a doctor, explain it for a second. You know, when you go through menopause, they give you estradiol, they give you testosterone, and instead of ingesting it, you could put it on your skin on the inside of your wrist. Does that really work?
Yes, it does. You know, there are creams which will get, you know, those into your body.
Okay.
So, you know, a lot of women, because estrogen is great for the skin.
Mm-hmm.
So instead of rubbing it on your inner arm or your underarm or vaginally, you can still rub it on your face and get some benefit of, you know, plumper skin and things like that. Plus
right.
the systemic effect.
Right. And then do people come to your clinic for anti-aging opportunities there as well? Or is it more just medical serious condition?
Yeah, I would say it's medical anti-aging more than cosmetic anti-aging.
Okay.
You know, if you're 75, you know, one of the hallmarks of aging is loss of regenerative capacity.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this bank of adult stem cells you're born with goes away relatively quickly. By the time you're through your teenage years, you've lost 90% of your stem cells.
Hmm.
By the time you're mid-30s, it's 95%. Mid-50s, you know, 97.5%. And so as you get towards your 70s and 80s, you know, you're losing cells and you don't have the ability to replicate them. But
right.
this stuff gives you that ability. You know, as your knees start to creak because of just age and you've worn out cartilage, you can get an injection in your knee or your hip or shoulder. It actually regrow new cartilage instead
so
of
it,
having a knee.
It can regrow specific areas. So it's not a product that necessarily you're injecting in your stomach and it kind of is just making your whole body younger. I just made that up maybe, but that's how I assumed.
Right. You usually, you can give it intravenously.
Okay.
And it will circulate in your bloodstream until it finds areas of inflammation.
Got it. You said it migrates to areas of inflammation.
Right. And then it's been shown also to work on the mitochondria, which is kind of the power pack of your cell to help it become more efficient and get younger.
Right. Fascinating. Okay, I have a study here that says 1 in 36 8-year-old children have been identified with autism spectrum disorder. When did autism come in your life? Did you know anybody that was autistic before you had a child?
No, I did not. You know, and just, you know, 30 years ago, it was 1 in 10,000. That's the question is why is it so common now?
Mm,
you know, wow. and people like to say, oh, it's genetics, but it's not just genetics because genes don't change that often. And we've been looking for 25 years for the autism gene. And every gene that's been put forth associated with autism is there's normal people, you know, neurotypical, as we say, that have the same genetic abnormality that don't have autism, you know,
right.
And then some people say, oh, we've broadened the diagnostic code. So we're just diagnosing it more. Well, that the diagnosis hasn't changed since the early 90s.
Huh.
And the rate's still going up.
Right. So can you take us back to the moment that you first realized Marston was different? What were the early signs and the diagnosis? How did you navigate that early diagnosis?
I think the first, and you have to remember, you know, we're talking now 28 years ago,
mm-hmm.
You know, there was no Google, there was no internet. And so we had a child before him and we just knew he was different. He wasn't talking. His eye contact wasn't good. There was just something different about him. You know, the last thing we ever thought of was autism. We took him to Boston Children's Hospital. You know, we took him to several different hospitals at Miami Children's, and they made the diagnosis.
The Fed's out of options. Rate cuts, money printing, balance sheet reversals. They call it policy, but it's really panic. This is in-game economics, where hope replaces discipline and the illusion of control finally breaks. They're not cutting rates because things are strong. They're cutting because the system is cracking. Inflation's eating savings. The labor market's stalling. Confidence in the dollar is fading fast. For decades, the Fed built a house of paper. Now they're striking the match that could burn it all down, leaving you to pay the price. When's the last time you actually held the wealth you've spent your life working for? My friends at Noble Gold Investments have been helping Americans move from paper wealth into real tangible assets. Numbers on a screen can disappear, but physical gold and silver, they've outlasted every crisis in history. Visit NobleGoldInvestments.com and get your free wealth protection kit today. That's NobleGoldInvestments.com for your free wealth protection kit. Discover how simple it is to protect your future.
Past performance may not be indicative of future results. Investing in precious metals, including gold, involves risks. Consult with your tax attorney or financial professional before making an investment decision.
Holistic Goddess has been such a trusted resource for me on my health journey. One product I really wanted to highlight is their Holistic Menopause Support by PHD Health. It's been a game changer for me during perimenopause, and here's why I love it. It eases discomfort. It really helps with hot flashes and mood swings. The ingredients in it, including creatine, support mental sharpness. I feel more focused and clear-headed, which is so important for my busy days. Go to holisticgoddess.com and use code UNDERSTOOD for 15% off all orders. Wow. And what did you think when you were given that diagnosis?
That's the single biggest issue. You don't know what to do or what to think because, right. You know, when they tell you your child has leukemia, there's a playbook.
Right.
You know, when they tell you your child has autism, they just kind of slap you on the back and say, you know, just try therapy. There's nothing you can do. Which I don't believe, by the way, but there is something you can do.
Right, right. I want to kind of make the connection of you were a doctor at the time, obviously, and how all of a sudden did you start to realize there was a connection between stem cells and autism?
Well, I think I always, it's a brain issue. Mm-hmm. And there was a few salient patients in my life. I took care of a kid from the track team who got hit in the head with the hammer toss. Mm. And crushed his skull, brain coming out, still alive. And, you know, he lost a third of his brain and, but he eventually came out of his coma and graduated from college with a little bit of weakness of his left arm. And I always kind of said, you know, how can my patient with a third of his brain missing be essentially normal when my son with a full brain isn't normal? And, eventually, the CDC and the NIH said, we have to figure out why autism is increasing. They did a study in 2005 where they just took kids that had died and they looked at their brains. And what they found out was all these autistic kids had inflammation in their brains in a certain area. Mm-hmm. And that was the first time in 2005 that they said, these brains are different. You know, they're not normal. There's an inflammatory process going on. Mm-hmm. And in fact, the researchers there were very good, because they narrowed it down to a specific cell, a cell called the glial cell. And they actually said, if we could ever figure out how to control glial cell inflammation, we'll be able to treat autism. So that was 2005. Fast forward to 2008, 2009, mm-hmm. CTE, chronic traumatic encephalopathy. Remember all the football players? Mm-hmm. They're getting a concussive blow, and then 20 years later, they're 30 times more likely to have dementia.
Right.
Well, the traumatic brain injury people, they found out that these football players were getting glial cell inflammation. Hmm. And that over time, the inflammation caused a greater injury than the original concussion. So there was a 30 different trials looking at ways to control brain inflammation. And the 30th thing they used was umbilical cord blood. And it turned it off.
And does it turn it off right at that point, or can it actually bring it back to where it was?
That's an excellent question. And the answer is it does turn it off, but it also promotes restoration. Mm. And so as soon as that was published in 2017, took them almost, you know, 9 or 10 years to figure it out. Duke said, well, this is the same inflammation we see in cerebral palsy and autism. You know, give me a bunch of kids with cerebral palsy, give me a bunch of kids with autism. And what they found out was that 88% of the kids with cerebral palsy got significantly better, and 65% of the kids with autism got significantly better. And what they showed with the kids with autism was they did MRIs every month and actually showed that they started forming new connections in their brain, and they actually got new growth in their brain. So not only did it turn off the inflammation, but it turned on restoration. And so there was now objective evidence that you were starting to get more connections. You were starting to get more nerve growth. And they're actually, their EEG started to normalize. So their brain waves started to get better. And so this just exploded onto the scene, you know, a few months before the pandemic. And of course, nothing happened kind of from 19 to 21, 22. And so there's a bunch of ongoing studies right now.
So is it still in the study phase, or is this something that they absolutely use now in certain scenarios where they feel like this is the golden thing that they need to use it to heal?
I think it's still in the study phase, but people are starting to realize, like, there's something called hypoxic ischemic injury of birth. You know, your child gets, you know, injured in the birth canal. They aspirate meconium. You know, they'll give stem cells on the third day of life, fourth day of life. Cerebral palsy, autism is starting to become more aware. UCLA just published a big study on Alzheimer's, where it looks like a lot of the changes of Alzheimer's are starting to reverse with stem cells. I think the neurodegenerative disorders, because there's nothing else that fixes it, are starting to find out. They're starting to find out that it increases your ejection fraction in your heart. So people with congestive heart failure are starting to get treated with it. I think this will be the biggest discovery since antibiotics.
That's an amazing statement. So what was the process for you? And for anyone listening that's like, oh, this is something that I need for my child, or I want to read more about, how do they get access to this? How do you find a doctor that really knows about this? That's like, this is how we got to get into this trial.
Well, first of all, you know, I would, any medical school around you, I would just, you know, go on their website and search stem cells for autism, or stem cells for multiple sclerosis, or stem cells for whatever disease you have. Type 1 diabetes looks like it's getting, you know, a significant improvement. Rheumatoid arthritis is another one. So whatever you have, if you have a chronic condition, I would just Google it to see if there's not a trial. First at the medical school closest to you, and then if not, just on the internet. You know, I'm one of the few, but there are others, you know, out there in the United States as well. And then just see what they have to say.
What could be the negative effects of trying something like this?
The biggest negative is the cost.
Okay.
That it may not help, because this is still very early, and not all news is good news. And so the first Duke study, which showed a significant benefit, they followed it up with another phase two study, which didn't show a benefit.
Mm-hmm.
But that study had some issues. It was done during COVID, and, you know, you're not supposed to manipulate your data after, you know, you do the study. But they ended up with a significant amount of children with severe intellectual disabilities. Mm. And the average autistic child doesn't have a severe intellectual disability. So when they eliminated the children who had IQs in the 60s and below, then kids with IQs in the 70 and above did show a benefit. So that's the only red line we know right now. But as I tell parents, we know it's safe. There's no long-term side effects, and it could potentially be beneficial. 65 to 70% of kids benefit significantly. And the biggest question is, why not all? And nobody has really studied the non-responders yet. But that needs to be done, because it may be as simple as they need another dose, or they need a higher dose.
Right, right. Can you talk about your journey a little bit? Like, at what point in Marston's life did you start to say, okay, let's try some things to see if this works on him? What else did you try before you tried stem cells?
Okay, well, my wife was a bulldog. As soon as we got the diagnosis, she went headstrong into everything, which is why she wrote the book. Mm-hmm. You don't even have to read the book. It, you know, you can just look at the reference section, because everything we did is footnoted with websites and phone numbers, what worked, what didn't work, what we think is helpful, what didn't we think was helpful. Mm-hmm. She was a dietitian by trade. And so the only thing we knew at that time, you know, was dietary, you know, gluten-free, dairy-free, you know, anti-inflammatory diet. But we did horse therapy. We did hyperbaric oxygen therapy. We did speech therapy. We mm-hmm. did something called floor time, which now has kind of evolved into ABA therapy. You know, mm-hmm. we did all that. And so it was a great combination, because she would find the therapy. I would vet it. Does this make sense? Mm-hmm. Or doesn't it make sense? And then she's actually the one that came with me and said, you know, have you ever heard of stem cells? And I go, well, I know what stem cells are, but I don't know if anybody's using them. But then when the Duke study came out, I went back, I found the 2005 article. It all started making sense. I mean, this was not a willy-nilly decision. When they found out that it helped people with brain injury, and they were going to try it on autistic children, you know, most people don't know there's an animal model for autism. You know, they have bred like autistic rodents and autistic monkeys. Oh. And so they gave them human umbilical cord blood, and they got better. And wow. So it made sense in theory. It worked in an animal model, and then it went to human trials in a limited study, and it showed significant benefit.
So what was your experience with it with your son? How long did it take? What did you start to see? What was the process of the whole thing?
Well, as soon as I decided I wanted to do it, I called Duke. They published the study. I went to Duke. Mm-hmm. You know, I know people there. I can make a phone call and sit down with them and discuss it. And they were the world's nicest people. I had a long phone conversation. But the long and short of it, my child was 23, and nobody had ever done it in an adult with autism. And so, mm-hmm. you know, they weren't sure what to expect, but they were pretty sure that they weren't going to do it. So then I turned to Panama, which had been doing it for years. And then, you know, Panama, you know, their cutoff was 19. And then I found, or actually my wife found, a name in Chicago, Thomas Loeb. And Thomas Loeb is a world-class pediatric surgeon. He was the chief of surgery for St. Jude's Children's Hospital for decades. Wow. And he had a pediatric brain injury study going on at University of Illinois, Chicago. And even though my son wasn't pediatric, nor did he have a brain injury, they could give it out kind of on a compassionate need basis. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, I had a long conversation with him, and he just said, if it was my son, I would do it in a heartbeat. And so I took him up to Chicago. We did it. And to say it was profound, it was crazy. You know, at 23 years of age, he might have had 20 words, maybe 30. He could put two words together. And you know, within days, he was trying to start to talk more. His executive function picked up. He started talking, then he started asking questions, and he started using full sentences. And, you know, we didn't tell anybody we did it. You know, in fact, my niece, you know, she called me on the phone and said, you know, excuse the French, what the fuck's up with Marston? And I go, what's wrong with Marston? Is he okay? She said, no, he just called me on the phone. And she's 1 year older than him and kind of grew up with him. Mm-hmm. And that's the first time he ever made a phone call, to my knowledge. And he called his cousin and just asked how she was doing.
Wow.
And so then I took him back for a second treatment, and he continued to get even better. And then obviously he wasn't a pediatric, he wasn't a brain injured. And so Thomas Loeb said, let me show you how to do it. And he's the one that really pointed me in the right direction. So then I took over my son's care, and then, you know, my wife said, well, now that you've done this for our son, you have to do it for everyone.
Right.
And I tried to convince her I had a day job. You know, I was a busy plastic surgeon, and, you know, I don't have time for this. You know, and then she said, you know, when you meet your maker, you're going to have to say, so she said, just do it a half a day a week. And so I, you know, it went from a half a day a week to a full day a week to a day and a half a week, to 2 days a week. And, you know, about 2 weeks ago, I stopped operating, and I'm doing this full time. You know, I've operated for 35 years, and we're seeing, you know, once again, you don't want to oversell it, because it doesn't work on everybody.
Sure.
But we've seen kids go from just disasters to not disasters, from not being potty trained to being potty trained, executive function. They become lovable. They stop running around. They stop screaming. Kids going from special needs schools to regular schools. Kids that weren't talking start to talk. It's been amazing. And so I want to offer this therapy to anybody who wants it, because I do believe it's the only thing that can change their child's mind on a cellular level. You know, we know the physiology. We know what these do. It's sad it doesn't work for everybody, but it works for most.
So this is a fascinating story. So let me ask a few questions. So at the point before you had brought Marston in for the treatment, you said he knew maybe 20 words, but was it obvious that he could understand you all and he could comprehend? He just couldn't verbalize anything?
Yes. He had some executive function. He could follow, you know, even as a kid, if you said, get your purple pajamas, he would get them, but okay. He would never be able to say purple pajamas.
Okay.
So his receptive language was much better, obviously much better than his expressive language.
Which is obviously why when he was able to express, he already knew how to form a sentence because
correct,
he had learned
right, because it had been in his mind for 20 years.
Right.
And wow. So, and we see that. That's one of the questions I ask parents, because there's not a good IQ test. Mm-hmm. So I say, you know, if you say, let's go, does he walk toward the door or he grabs his shoes? You know, if you say it's time for bed, does he walk to the bedroom? You know, these are all soft signs that you know, their receptive language is good.
And when you went in for these treatments originally, I mean, I have no experiences with this, so I can only imagine, like, is it like getting chemo? You go in, you sit down, you have something injected for a while, and then you feel it a couple days later. Like, what's that process?
Yeah, it's easier than chemo, but it would be like going to get like an IV drip at an IV clinic.
Got it. Okay.
You know, the whole thing takes about an hour. And really the stem cell component takes just a few minutes.
Okay.
And so the natural history of these cells is they get hung up in the liver, lung, and spleen for about 8 days. And then about day eight, day nine, they start to migrate back into the bloodstream. And that's when they start to seek out inflammation. And in the animal models of brain inflammation, all the cells are in the brain by about 2 weeks.
Okay. So when did you start to see the first signs that it was working? How many days later?
Oh, I think it was 48 hours. Because these cells have, and there's other cells too, but these cells have two functions: stop inflammation, start new growth.
Okay.
And just starting to decrease the inflammation, you know, makes these kids feel better and act better.
Right. Right. And then how often did you continue to do this? And then I know you took it over.
Yeah. He got a second treatment at about 6 months, and then a third treatment a year from that. And so far, he's had 5 treatments over 6 years.
About. Okay. And where is he at now? What is he like?
He lives on his own, drives a car, has a job, and is completely conversant.
No way.
Right, right. I'll try not
what?
To cry, but if you would have told me that 5 years ago, I would have told you, you know, it would be impossible. Sorry.
No, I'm crying. That's amazing.
No. It's crazy. You know, on another note, I had a woman who came in who had a devastating trauma to one of her feet and, you know, multiple operation screws. The foot is deformed. It's red. It hurts, you know, just terrible pain in her foot. And she wanted stem cells for that. And I said, okay, yeah, you know, we can do it. They seek inflammation. I can't promise anything, but I think it has a good chance of helping. And probably just a week ago, she's about 5 weeks out. She called me and said, can these improve your eyesight? And I said, yeah, it's been shown that they can work on the eye and especially in glaucoma. And she said, I sat down at a restaurant last night and for the first time in 3 years, I could read the menu. And she said, if my eyesight gets any better, I'm going to ask my granddaughter back for my car back. And she had given up driving because she couldn't see well enough. And so, like I said, that's kind of the anti-aging thing, is that it helps treat glaucoma, your heart, and these areas that are aging. In fact, we have a word for it called inflammaging, like inflammatory, because as cells start to die off, they do get inflamed. And so I've seen some amazing stuff.
Wow. What an amazing story. All right. So as your wife and you were writing this book, what was it like having to talk about such personal things? Was this relieving? Was it great for her, especially? You know, what was the process?
I think it was traumatic for her, but then it became cathartic. She kept incredible notes, but she was reliving it. And one of the things that I don't know, and you never know how God works, but she had a younger sister who was brain injured. You know, was normal for the first 5 or 6 years of her life, and then was brain injured. And so she grew up helping take care of her sister. So she was not new to this process. She knew what it took. And we were the tip of the iceberg. You know, like you said, it's crazy now how many people are on the spectrum. And so she wrote this for parents of autistic kids, maybe siblings of parents, because nobody knows what it's like. Nobody knows what it's like to have the goofy kid who's not invited to the birthday party, you know, or other parents that don't call you to come hang out with their kids because, you know, your kid's not normal. But we know that feeling. And so she summed it all up. And it's a beautiful read, you know, just on motherhood, I think, on doing what it takes to try to heal your kid the best way you can.
Right. And not giving up. Yeah. It's amazing. Leaving no stone unturned. So what are some of the key takeaways from the book that you hope will change the way that people think about autism and education?
Well, the book's called Educating Marston, because that's our son. And then we knew early on that he just wasn't going to go to school. So we got him ready for life. And so, you know, your kid goes to college. He may, in the back of his mind, know how to wash his clothes and make his bed. But, you know, with autistic kids, a lot of that stuff has to be taught, you know. And so we started teaching him, you know, aspects of living that you don't have to teach most kids.
Right.
But I think the takeaway from the book is perseverance, that autism is a disease. You know, it's something that, you know, we believe, or I believe, can be managed. Just like arthritis is inflammation of the joints, that this is inflammation of the brain, and right, it can be treated and made better. And then evaluate every therapy, and at 2 months, if you don't see a clear-cut benefit, move on. You know, because not everybody's the same. And she wrote a book that is like a manual for, you know, what to try and how to do it and what the reason behind it is. With, like I said, you don't even have to read the book. You can just, at the end of every chapter, there's a reference section on phone numbers and websites and how to find the people that do that type of therapy.
Right, right. Well, I encourage everyone to read it, Educating Marston, A Mother and Son's Journey Through Autism. If people want to reach out to you to come to your clinic, to talk to you, how can they reach you?
NorthFloridaStemCells.com. And I think there's a patient intake thing, but I talk to every patient. You know, everybody who is really deciding, I think you know, I still want to be Dr. Weiss. I don't want to be a treatment mill. You know, I want you to have my cell phone number. You call me. I go over the pros and cons. And if you want to bring your child here, I'm more than happy to do it. I'm the one that does it. You know, the parents can be in the room. We offer sedation because a lot of kids are scared. And I think that's one of the benefits of me being a surgeon, is I sedated people for 35 years. So it can be a much more pleasant experience than trying to cut their hair or do their teeth or, you know, get blood draws or stuff like that.
Right. So this is fascinating. I mean, are people contacting you if they have loved ones or family members that are later in their life and they're starting to lose their memory, like you were talking about before, if they want to try stem cell?
Probably had my first couple. Like I said, I'm just kind of phasing in this to my new life. It was a man in South Florida, and his son's in New York, and he just got the diagnosis of Alzheimer's disease. Mm. And the son called me, and I said, yeah, UCLA just published a study that, to me, you don't want to wait long enough that you're starting to get permanent brain changes. You want to treat it early on.
Right.
And there are some studies out there that, you know, you can prevent it more than treat it. And so he just came up and got some.
And is there something to be said for people that are younger than what we were talking about, but like middle age, like in their 50s, someone like me who has chronic back pain? I can't read. I need readers, you know, things like that. But is there something to be said for people middle age that aren't necessarily suffering from a major disease, but want to start doing some preventative stem cell use?
Right, right. Without a doubt. My personal, I got sick just with pneumococcal pneumonia, ended up in the hospital, you know, for 10 days, was pretty sick. But when I got out of the hospital, I couldn't walk up four steps without having to stop. And so I went from the hospital to my office, gave myself, you know, stem cells. And within 2 weeks, I was walking 3 miles. And I got better so quickly that the hospital wouldn't let me operate. They said, no, you were just in the hospital. You have to take 6 weeks off and then come back to us.
Wow. Wow. I guess the last question that we started to talk about, but what is covered by insurance then relating to stem cells?
If you have a known disease where stem cells are the known therapy and it's FDA approved, it'll be covered. The pediatric lymphomas, leukemia, something called inborn errors of metabolism. But yeah, anti-aging in the 50s. Without a doubt, especially former athletes and stuff, because people that have gotten injured, whether it be car accidents or on the playing field, they use their bank up quicker. They're physiologically older.
Right. Right. And, but if somebody has to pay out of pocket, I would assume this is a very expensive treatment.
It is expensive. The product's expensive. Mm-hmm. And that's because, you know, right now, even if you make it past the intake, four out of every 10 samples are still being thrown away due to things we find in the blood, genetic abnormalities. You know, these have to be very pure cells because we're giving them to somebody else.
Right.
And so the company has to process them and freeze them within 48 hours. Well, it takes 2 weeks to get the hepatitis A, B, and C, the HIV, the human T-cell leukemia virus, zinc or West Nile, CMV, Chagas. You know, all that stuff is tested for, plus the histories, the genetic histories of the mother and the father. And, you know, there's stuff that, you know, if you've been out of the United States within 2 years, if you had a recent tattoo, you know, there's things that pop up that we don't know about. And so the company has invested in preserving those cells just to throw them away because they fail on the back end.
Right. Right. And what's the, what are the studies that have anything to do with cancer?
That is not my specialty, but in umbilical cord blood, there's a cell called a natural killer cell. And I don't know if you know what a natural killer cell is. Mm-hmm. That's part of our immune system that just has the ability to recognize kind of virally infected cells as well as malignant cells. Supposedly, you and I are forming malignant cells every day of our lives. And we have these natural killer cells that recognize them and kill them all day long. But as you age, your immune system weakens, you lose your natural killer cells. And, you know, that's how cancers grow and form.
Right.
So people are looking at the natural killer cells. The one way, which is not that way that people look at it, is they give you enough chemotherapy to like kill every blood cell in your body. So, you know, kills everything in your bone marrow. And then they are able to reconstitute a whole new immune system with umbilical cord blood. Mm-hmm. But those people need to be on lifelong human immune suppression. You know, it's like having a transplant as opposed to being healed.
Right. Right.
But there are people looking at it.
Right. My last question is about Marston. I can't believe what he's doing now and capable of. It's so fascinating. Will he continue every so often, once a year, whatever it is, to do more of the stem cells to keep him on the level he is now? Like, what do you see for his future with that?
The Duke study showed that it was a one-time study, but the gains plateaued at 6 months, but never went away. So you can stair step up, because what we're promoting is new growth in the brain. Mm-hmm. And if there's not an ongoing inflammatory hit, whatever that inflammation that caused it, your brain hopefully can heal all the way, or at least part of the way.
Right.
But my son has a cognitive issue as well. And it's the only thing you can give somebody that's ever been shown to grow new brain cells.
Could people that are suffering from Tourette's syndrome even try it? Have studies been done on that?
There has been a study done on it, and it was kind of wishy-washy. Hmm. The biggest issue with Tourette's is, you know, you don't die from it. I mean, the most common cause of death for somebody with autism is drowning. And that's because they don't have fear of the water. They don't have fears of cars. They get hit by cars. They drown at a significant rate. And so that's why we had these brains to take a look at. Tourette's, I kind of looked at it and said, you know, just from understanding the physiology, that it looked like it might be beneficial. Mm-hmm. But there's been no kind of major studies done.
Right.
Just because we don't have a good understanding. But I believe any neurologic disorder, you know, could potentially benefit. And eventually we'll get down to looking at Tourette's.
Amazing. I can't wait to hear more about this. I'm assuming at some point in my future, I'm going to come through your office, because who doesn't want to feel better, look better, and, you know, find out what kind of inflammation is going on in their body and get that assessed and fixed. So it's such a pleasure to meet you. I find it fascinating what you're doing. The story about your son is absolutely unbelievable. If people want to get the book, again, it's called Educating Marston, A Mother and Son's Journey Through Autism. Where could people find the book?
It's at Amazon, Books a Million, but probably Amazon is the easiest. Everybody in the world has an Amazon account.
And one more time for people, if they want to reach out and book an appointment, where can they find you?
NorthFloridaStemCells.com.
Amazing. We'll put it in our show notes too. Dr. Weiss, thank you so much. I wish you the best of luck. Fascinating interview. Take care. Please give our best to Marston and your wife.
Thank you so much for listening to Misunderstood. I'm your host, Rachel Yucatel. Please be sure to subscribe to the show and give us a 5-star rating and review. You can support the show by joining our Patreon at patreon.com/misunderstood with Rachel Yucatel. Do you have ideas for the show or want to reach out? Email us at info@misunderstoodpodcast@gmail.com. That's spelled MISS understood. Thank you so much, and I'll see you next time.